Hello, and welcome to Higher Ed, KUT's podcast focusing on issues of higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT 90.5, Austin's NPR station, talking as always with Dr. Ed Berger, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Hello, Ed.
Hello, Jennifer, and I'm excited about whatever is to come.
Well, I'm glad you're excited. I'm excited today because our topic comes from a listener, which I always think is a great topic for an episode when ideas come from listeners. I want to read you what Crystal sent in to us. Crystal writes, I am a brand new college instructor at the University of Houston. I teach an elementary math methods course. My students are seniors who are concurrently student teaching. They have 2 3-hour classes each Monday. They're in classrooms the rest of the week. My class is the Monday afternoon class, and I'm struggling to keep their interest for 3 hours. I'm using video, Google Forms, Padlet, moving discussion strategies, and group presentations to keep them engaged, but it still doesn't seem like enough. Any ideas on how I can get my tired students engaged and interested for 3 whole hours? What do you think?
Yes. Well, my class at Southwestern on effective thinking through creative puzzle solving is a 2.5-hour Monday night, so it's even worse than poor Crystal. So I empathize with her. The first thing you got to do is you got to make sure that you give time for breaks. That's number one. It can't be a 3-hour block, and it sounds like that she's not doing that anyway. But that's just a basic fact. And I think that there's a fundamental issue here, especially with math. And she said she was teaching some math method stuff, and these are probably education majors, future teachers. You know, a lot of this content is stuff that these people really don't necessarily care about, and they've probably seen before but never really bothered to make meaning of it, and now they have to see it again. So their own dynamic, where they're from, their body language is one that's like, I really don't want to be here. And so the first thing that we as math teachers, Crystal included, need to do is to first of all create a classroom environment where it's a joy to be there. And I think one of the things that we can do is just say right up front, this is going to be different from other math classes that you've seen. And here's why. First of all, it's a big extended period of time. We're going to kind of challenge you and do different things, different dynamics. We're going to work in group settings. Very active learning is always the most interesting way to learn. Sounds like she's doing a little bit of that as well. And she's using different media. I think that's fantastic as well. But to set up different expectations and break the bias that they may have. And then the next thing I would suggest is that she tries to incorporate inspiring the students to be curious. And we've talked about curiosity, I think, at some point.
Oh, yes.
But the idea is we should never be answering a question that they are not at that moment asking. And so the real challenge in teaching math and frankly teaching anything, although, you know, political science and history and English, you know, those are easier because they're more kind of human. They're closer to how we feel, is to bring students to a place where they look at us and say, well, how do you do that? And then you're like, oh, I'm so glad you asked. Here's the quadratic formula. And then all of a sudden you're off and running. And I think that that is what we really need to do, especially in long form classes, is to stimulate the curiosity of the students so that they wonder that which we want to discuss.
So what are some ways to stimulate that curiosity? I mean, I imagine that, you know, she's teaching teachers, and so there's a lot of material to get through, and they, you know, they are in the classroom, they are tired, they are they are distracted, they've got, you know, 1,000 things going on in their head. So how do you kind of get students to a place of, wow, what, you know, how does that work? Or how did you get them students to do that time? How do you get them to that place?
Well, you know, if you think about, now I'm just talking math now, so this is, so for any of our listeners who are not huge math fans or math teachers, this might be, but analogies.
Sure, you could insert other topics.
Correct,
right?
And also, you know, other constructs. But the truth is, with respect to math, I mean, we're trying to show them theorems, things that hold in general. And so in doing that, if you were to pick a particular instance, a particular scenario, a particular example, and then you show that this thing, you can get to this answer, or you can figure it out, or you know the answer so quickly, it inspires people to say, well, how did she know that? How did she get to that so quickly? So what's going on? I want to figure that out. And so if you make it into a riddle or a puzzle or a conundrum, then there's this curiosity of how come that person did it and I don't know how to do it. And then it's like, well, show me how. Show me the secret. So it's like magic, right? Show me a magic illusion and then show me the secret behind the curtain. And all of a sudden they're learning.
I also wonder, just sort of bigger picture here, and I'll be my sort of grumpy old lady, get off my yard, get off my lawn
you
for a minute.
You are not old. Well, maybe grumpy, but certainly not old.
I'm thinking of the students that Crystal is teaching, and I'm going to assume, you know, I'm going to put the range like maybe 18 or 19 to, I don't know, 24, 25, 26.
Or even older.
Even older, right. And wanting to become teachers. But I'm wondering if some of them have grown up and come through school in a time where there's a lot more stimulation of, you know, of their attention during the day. And, you know, they've got their phones and, you know, that everything is just moving faster and that it's harder. This is more of a question than a statement. I'm wondering, is it harder to keep students' attention through a long stretch of time just because of the environment that a lot of them have come up in?
Well, absolutely. But you don't have to wait. You don't have to wait 3 hours for that. I say a 50 minute standard class is way too long.
Yeah.
And I've often dreamed and wondered the advantage of having maybe like 3 20-minute classes in the same subject happening, but in different intervals. So first you take 20 minutes of math, then you take 20 minutes of social studies, then you take 20 minutes of literature, then you take 20 minutes of math again, and you kind of rotate that way. I'm not proposing that's a good idea, but I am saying it's an idea, which then grapples with your point. I think attention span issues have been around forever, including when you were a kid and even when I was a kid. Today, it's amplified because through our smart devices, we can get instant gratification, instant information, and we are constantly trying to be somewhere else. So one of the things that I do in my long-form class, like Crystal's class, is I introduce mindfulness. And so when you come in, the first thing you do is you shut everything off. These devices are off, and you're going to be in the moment, in this community, with us together. And we practice some form of mindfulness to kind of allow their brains to calm down a little bit. And it's amazing how their attitudes will change, how they will become in a better mood. They'll be slightly more joyful and they'll be more open and more relaxed. And instead of this tension, what do we do? What's next? What's next? And we have to get through it. It's become a little bit more, okay, so where are we? And what are we thinking about? And let me share my ideas. Let me share my thinking and let me learn. Oh, isn't that neat? And all of a sudden we've opened up some space for our brains to grow and our imaginations to enhance.
Well, I'm wondering if also, you know, you were mentioning every sort of 15 or 20 minutes, that idea of kind of changing.
Yeah,
maybe Crystal should do puzzlers with her students.
Okay. Nice segue. Exactly. Well, yes. And of course, Making Up Your Own Mind is a book that has lots of puzzlers in it. It's a shameless
who wrote
plug.
That?
I don't know, but someone who shamelessly plugs his own books. All right. But speaking of puzzlers, how about returning to the puzzler of last week, which was supposed to be a challenge? And as I recall, I think that you did not immediately have an answer.
I did not immediately have an answer at the time, though I did bring back my sketch from last week.
I see you've got the bridge. Let me remind our listeners exactly what the puzzler was. It was a little bit complicated. There are four people who are trying to cross a bridge at night. They require a flashlight, and they only have one, to illuminate the path in front of them, and no more than two people can cross this rickety bridge at the same time. Now, different people take different times to cross the bridge. A, B, C, D, Alice, Bob, Chris, and Deb. Alice takes 1 minute to cross the bridge. Bob takes two. Chris takes 5 minutes. And Deb requires 10 minutes to cross the bridge. The challenge I put forth to Jennifer and to you, our listeners, is can the group cross the bridge in 17 minutes or not?
All right, so
Jennifer,
my initial reaction was, yes, they can.
Okay.
And here is the scenario I envision.
Good.
So Deb takes 10 minutes to cross the bridge.
Sure.
So give Deb the flashlight and tell her, go ahead and start.
Right.
So she's holding the flashlight. She's illuminating the bridge and the path ahead. Mm-hmm. And then each of the other people subsequently goes in and takes their amount of time. So
walks in front.
Right. So because they will be moving at a faster pace than Deb, let Deb go first and always be at the rear with the flashlight lighting the path.
Well, but the bridge is winding and you can fall off it and the light only goes so far.
Well, these are details.
Well, okay, so I love your solution. So I'd give your solution a solid A.
Okay.
Maybe even A+ because it's very creative. But the intent was that the people would be always behind the flashlight and not in front. But I have to say, I'll give you full credit for that solution.
Okay.
That was not the spirit of what the Mathematical Association of America had in mind when it published it, though.
Well, you know, I'm not worried that I have not adhered to the spirit of the
Mathematical Association. Well, you should be.
Hopefully they will not come down on me.
Well, now they might.
Well, all right. So let's pivot a little bit then. All right. So math people, math society.
Exactly.
So then what you would want to do is probably A is Alice, right?
Yes. And she takes the fastest.
So she's probably going to need the flashlight and she's going to have to go back and forth, I think. Because if she can cross in a minute, she needs to be crossing and she's going to have to go back and forth and sort of be the holder of the light, if you will.
Okay.
But of course, she's going to be only able to go as quickly as the other person in order to keep the light path. So
go ahead.
Let's say that she crosses with Deb first. So that's 10 minutes.
That's 10 minutes.
And then she's a minute back.
She has to walk a minute
that's
to get to the other
minutes.
Side. Right. Good.
Then she gets Chris.
Okay.
That's 5 minutes across the bridge.
Okay.
But then another minute back.
Right. So now we're up to...
Well, we're at 17
We're 17
minutes.
Right now. And we're not quite done yet. But then what has to happen?
What keep was going. B? Bob?
Bob, yes.
Okay. Bob takes 2 minutes.
Right, with Alice. And so that's 2 more minutes, which would be...
That's 10 and 5, 17. That's 19 minutes.
19
so
minutes.
So they can't make it.
So they can't make it. Excellent. So I love both of your solutions. One was they can and one was they can't. And so I like them both.
They both work in their own parameters.
Except the second one.
The second one?
Yeah, the second one doesn't work under the
Why
parameters.
Why not?
Because under those parameters, in fact, it can be done.
How? Do tell.
Okay, so here is a solution that will get you in at 17 minutes. So first of all, Alice and Bob walk across.
Okay.
Let me tell you the idea. By the way, I loved the idea that the person who goes really fast has to be the holder of the flashlight. That was the insight that was essential.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Now we're quibbling over 2 minutes. Right, I mean, that's what we're doing now, right?
This could be a critical 2 minutes.
I understand, but I mean, but you had a big idea, which I think is the one that's. But and what you try to do was you said, okay, let's do the hard part first. Let's bring the slow movers over first.
Yes.
In fact, there's going to be some wisdom in getting the fast people over first.
Okay.
So let's take a look at this scenario. Suppose that Alice and Bob cross.
Okay.
Bob takes two.
Two.
So that means it takes 2 minutes. Now Alice walks back as you suggested. So now we're at minute 3.
Right.
Now. Let's have Chris and Deb go together because one takes 5 and one takes 10. So we get to save some of the 5 minutes with the 10.
So Alice hands the flashlight off to one of them.
Correct.
Oh.
And so now those two slower movers walk over in just 10 minutes. So now we've got Chris and Deb over and we're only 13 minutes in. And now what do? We give the flashlight to Bob.
What? Oh, and Bob goes back.
Now, he takes 2 minutes. He takes 2 minutes, but now he's back, and now the two of them walk over. That takes another 2 minutes. So 2 more minutes from 13 gives
that
us 15.
Is 17.
And then 2 more minutes to walk back is 17, and there you have it.
Interesting.
So you had the right concept, but you had to kind of fool around with the idea of realizing that if I'm going to have a 10-minute walker, let's have the next slowest person walk with that person.
Well, and what's really interesting is that has implications, right? I mean, if you're trying to figure out, say, you know, evacuations from a hotel or from a ship, or a school.
Great point.
And you need and mm-hmm. timing does matter, then a formula or some sort of rubric of generally you
want to... Clumping slower yes. people together rather than fast and slow right. together could potentially right. be more effective.
So this could have some real-world implications.
It so. Could, but I just think the Mathematical Association of America is very happy and proud of you. And so on behalf of them, I'm a member of them, I want to say congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. Please extend my sincere gratitude to the math people.
I think you just did, and I'm sure they listen to our
I hope
podcast.
So. I hope they do. I hope they do.
Well done. Well done.
Well, thank you. That was a fun one.
Good.
And you know, I said sort of half jokingly the idea of Crystal tossing in some puzzlers in class, but I do kind of like that idea of changing, I don't know, format is the right word, but you know, Crystal is concerned about she's got a 3-hour class and she's right. got students who are really tired and have a lot going on, of sort of changing up just the format and the way that the information is conveyed so that it is sort of rolling in a rhythm, as you know, suggest that every 15 or 20 minutes, maybe it's time to switch gears a little, and that it doesn't always have to look like I am now the teacher and I am telling you stuff and you will listen and write it down.
So I've got a dear friend of mine who has a son in school, in middle school, high school. And his name is Ian. Brilliant kid. The kid's phenomenal. Great kid. And he was in my office the other day, and we were talking about math, and I asked him what he was learning, and he's just amazing. And I said, well, so how do you like math this year? And he said, oh, you know, I like it. He likes math. He goes, oh, I like it, but it's being done differently than it's been in the past. And I said, oh, tell me about that. Now, these are regular 50-minute classes. Mm-hmm. But in his earlier classes, so in previous years, they were much more activity-based. So they were active learning where they were given challenges, and then they had to kind of use their imagination, stumble, fall, learn from the mistakes, and, you know, what we talk about. His current teacher, Ian's current teacher, is someone who is a little bit more of the kind of traditional lecture style. Let me show you how it's done, then you practice it. He is enjoying this teacher, so he wasn't complaining, but he did say that the dynamic was different, and so it made it kind of more interesting to try, maybe interesting is too positive, but it made it more challenging to try to kind of keep focus, because you had to keep listening rather than doing. And the more you can create active learning in the classroom or even outside the classroom, we learn better when we're actively engaged and we're the producers of the ideas rather than merely the consumers of the idea. And that's what Ian's discovering, and that's your comment as well.
Well, and it seems like that there's something about that associated with age, and that the older you get in school, and you know, when you get in middle school and high school, that the tendency is to leave those activities behind because that's sort of like for younger students, or somehow it seems less, and I'm using air quotes, like it's not as appropriate for older students, but I bring it on.
Bring it on.
Dr. Ed Berger is president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. You can find out more at southwestern.edu. And you can keep your brain busy by keeping up with the news and other episodes of Higher Ed at KUT.org and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Jennifer Staton, KUT News.